EMSradio.com.
EMS information for the next generation.
The EMS Leadership Podcast is a production of EMSradio.com. You can interact with us via email, emsleadership@gmail.com, or call us 303-720-6001.
Thank you for joining us for another episode of the EMS Leadership Podcast. And now here's your host, Chris Ceballero.
Well, Happy New Year, everyone. Hopefully everybody had a great holiday season and you're ready for an outstanding new year. This is EMS Leadership, and we're really excited to be back with you and starting your 2017 off with some great leadership content. You know, so one of the things I think we start with first is I want to ask you this question. How do you measure the success of a leader? So when you think about leadership, what's the best way to measure their success? Is the fact that they can do a line item budget, the fact that they know where their resources are, the fact that they can work a schedule like a Michelangelo of a sculpture? You know, so how do you figure out, how do you determine the success of a leader? And someone asked me that question, and very, very simply I said, it's by the employee satisfaction, the employee engagement, and the productivity of the workforce. It makes no difference if you can work a budget, if you can deal with the resources, if you can work a schedule. What makes a difference is what your employees are doing. That's the gauge of a great leader. And that's what we're going to talk about today as we start the new year, is how do we increase our employee engagement and make it the very best that we can. But before we get started, let's go ahead and bring in our cast of characters. Still out there in sunny California is our Italian friend, Patrick Pianezza. Patrick, welcome back, and Happy New Year to you.
Thank you very much. I'm really excited to be here. Looking forward to the 2017 schedule and being able to chat with you guys again. It's always a learning opportunity for me, and I'm always excited to be here.
Well, it's always great to have you here, and we're going to take this out to the East Coast and to the last bastion of civilization as they know it, our good friend Don Lundy. Don, how are you?
I'm doing great, Chris. It's an honor to be back on for 2017. Another great year coming forward.
Man, there's a lot of things that are going on. You know, we talked about in our first show back, we talked about EMS 3.0. You know, you got community paramedicine. You got a lot of things that are going on. So I think 2017 is going to bring some really great things from the leadership side. And I think we're the guys just to do it. Rob's unable to join us this evening, but he'll be back with us as we record again. But guys, let me set you up with this, and I'm going to give you a little bit of statistic that when I read this really kind of shocked me. But I want to go ahead and share it with you, and then I want to go ahead and get your opinions about it. So the Gallup organization, which is the preeminent resource when it comes to employee engagement, you go to their website, and they have it in their dashboard of a constant, you know, tick away of what, you know, the nation's employee engagement is, and they'll say that only 29% of our workforce is engaged, 54% is disengaged, and 17% is actively disengaged. So that's almost three-quarters of our workforce that's either disengaged or actively disengaged, and we define actively disengaged by not only are they not engaged, but they're trying to submarine the success of the other people. So when we think about, as I started the show, we think about that the success of a leader rests with the workforce. How do we now do a good job with that team when almost 75% of our workforce is either disengaged or actively disengaged? So Don, as we start this discussion, those are pretty staggering numbers.
Those are staggering numbers, and I haven't seen the study, but I'd really call into question whether that's correct or not. I don't want to be the glasses half full guy, but I've always seen people willing to be engaged if they know what the mission is, and if those numbers are true, and I have no reason to believe they're not, I would have to go back and ask them some more questions, like, well, why aren't you engaged? And my bet is they don't know the mission. They don't know where they're going or what their project is. And I think sometimes we as leaders, you know, we know what needs to be done, but we forget to tell everybody. I know that sounds simplistic, but we forget to tell people what the mission is. and what the direction is we're going and what we're going to do, and ask them, do you think that's the right direction? Is there anything you can add to it? You know, that's how you get them engaged. And my bet is when you say 60% are actively not engaged, if you're to ask them, you know, what's the mission statement of your organization, or what is the mission of your organization, they'd shrug their shoulders and say, I don't know. They don't tell me much. So I think the very first thing in 2017, I mean, the very first thing is we need to realize that the workforce that we have is not the workforce we worked with or the workforce of our parents or our parents' parents. These young people that are coming into the system and the people that have been there for a while would love to be engaged, but it's not on the backside of being engaged. It's on the front side. They need to be at the front of the line. They need to be the first ones to know what's in the future. What are we thinking of doing? What do we want to accomplish? What's the mission? And it has to be driven home more than once a year. It has to be on a constant basis. So I think on the front side, if you say, let's talk about 2017, what's the mission going to be this year? I know the mission is taking care of our patients. I got it. And the mission is to make us all safe. I got that. But beyond those two primary issues, what do we want to accomplish this year? The minute you get them engaged in that conversation, and it's not just, you know, the first in service, it's all year long because the conversation is going to change, the more engaged they'll be.
Patrick, I'm going to go to you, and I want to hear your thoughts about the Gallup numbers. So go ahead and save that. But I just want to touch on this. You know, Don, you said something I think was very, very poignant. One of the things that I do when I go and talk to leaders and, you know, give a motivational talk, whatever it is, I'll always ask them, how many folks out there have a vision statement? And usually you get people who will raise their hand with pride. And then I'll ask them, who can come up here and recite it for me? And those hands don't go up very, very quickly. And, you know, the thought of it is that if you don't know the vision statement, why does the workforce need to know the vision statement? But this is one of the most important, pieces of documentation that we have in our organizations. And follow along with me if you're playing at home. I want you to think about your car. Now I want you to think about your front door. When I said think about your car, you didn't see the letter C-A-R. You actually saw the picture of your car. You actually saw the picture of your front door. We are wired to think in pictures. So within our organizations, if the individuals don't have a vision so they can picture where they're going, they're just going to flounder and not have a direction to move in. So I'm glad you brought that up. So we could touch on back on that in a minute, if you like, as we talk about how to engage the workforce. But Patrick, I'd like to get your thoughts about the Gallup numbers.
Well, those numbers present an incredible opportunity to bring people back into the fold, as I say. And I think one of the disservices that those Gallup numbers shows, you only have those three buckets. And when you look at those three buckets, the titles of them skew themselves to be negative. And what I mean by that is, so you have, I can't remember what your numbers were, but that whatever your engaged workforce, and you have disengaged and actively disengaged. And the science behind those three buckets is rather robust. Gallup is by no means a small name out there in the surveying world. In fact, they're one of the top three that do multiple survey methodologies and modalities, everything from employees to patients to, they also do the national polling, which is kind of controversial at this point in time. But what I mean to say is Gallup is a very, very respected organization in that space, and their numbers are, for the most part, ironclad. When you hear the fact that the majority of your workforce is disengaged, I look at that as an opportunity to bring them back in and to make them and part of the engaged workforce. Now, the other big piece is that your, quote, disengaged workforce, they're not torpedoing your organization, but they're also not cheerleading everything that your organization is doing. And there could be multiple reasons for that. One of them may be, like Don so eloquently pointed out, they're not connected with the mission statement. And it's not just words on a page. Most organizations that I've worked with or have helped in my past have really convoluted mission statements. And then there are some that get it right. So Sharp Healthcare's mission statement is to be the best healthcare provider in the universe. To me, that's pretty stunning. The fact that I can remember that, even though I've never worked for or with Sharp Healthcare, it says something. Their mission statement is clear, it's concise, and it's absolutely central to everything that they do. So when I look at things like that, things that can resonate with an employee base, that's the first step in getting them engaged. The other portion you have to look at too is, what is the relationship with their manager? The number one thing that drives employee engagement is that employee's interaction with their direct supervisor. What's their relationship like with their coworkers? What's that atmosphere like? Is it a micromanagement type of atmosphere? Is there a lot of fear? Is there a lot of retribution? All of that comes into what is the manager or that leader's perspective on that? How are they engaging with the day-to-day workforce? So when I hear that those numbers about the engaged versus the disengaged versus the actively disengaged, you have to have separate strategies to dealing with each one of those three buckets. And this is reminiscent of Studer Group high, middle, low performers, where the majority of your workforce, just by the bell curve, are in that middle column. And that's not a bad thing. Those are the people that are day in and day out coming in, punching a clock, doing a job, and they're going home at the end of the day. That doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to carry the banner and wrap their car with whatever organization that you work with.
Right. But let me bring up a point with that, because I think you touched on something. I don't mean to cut you off, but I want to go ahead and jump on this thought that you have right here. So we invite these people into our organizations to help us be successful, and we spend an awful lot of money to bring them into our organizations. Maybe we do an interview. Maybe we do a written test. Maybe we do a clinical skills test. Maybe we do psychometric testing. Maybe we're doing personality testing, whatever that is. And then when these folks come into our organization, we give them a little bit of an orientation. We give them a little bit of field training. And then we stick them on an ambulance, or we stick them in a corner and we say, raise your hand if you have a question. So if our workforce is truly the most important component to the success of our organization, we're not investing in them enough for them to help us be successful, hence them being disengaged, because it seems like nobody is caring about them.
And to your point, in EMS, oftentimes that's, well, at least in my experience in EMS, you're absolutely right. But in EMS, we are dealing with such large emotional roller coaster rides that is truly a disservice. And I think if you were to single out EMS as an industry, I think we don't do enough, even for your engaged workforce, to ensure that not only are they engaged as far as promotional opportunities, but investing in them to make sure that they're healthy, not just physically, but mentally as well, emotionally.
Yeah, I agree. Don, what's your thoughts? I'd be interested to hear what you have to say.
You know, when I hear of employee engagement, I mean, I hear you, Chris. You know, we do spend a lot of money before they ever come on board. Now, if I'm employee X, with all due respect to my employer, I really don't care how much you spend up front, because I don't see that as a positive thing for me. It's the process to get the job. Now as a chief, yeah, I understand that's important to know I'm getting the right person. But in fact, as the employer, you know, it's nothing to me. I want to know where my uniforms are and when I can go. To the employee, to the paramedic and EMT that's on the street, I think it's important at 10 o'clock at night or at 8 o'clock at night or close of business day, when the chief comes by and says, hey, how's it going? What about truck X? How's that working? What's going on? And not so much to go by and tell them what's happening, is to go by and listen as to what's happening. I think if you were to, and I think Patrick's right, you know, these three buckets aren't enough to delve into what that means. But if you were to go in and ask people, you know, listen, this study out here says not many people are engaged, they would politely say, well, yeah, but they never listen to me. They're never here. And I think sometimes leaders will be in their office in the building and they'll say, sure, I'm here all the time. Well, they can't come by and see you. One, no one wants to come to your office. You come to the boss's office, it's usually a bad thing. Nobody likes to come there. I know that's not a surprise to the leadership that's out there. That's why we have candy on the desk. I thought just to talk people to come in, you can come in and it's not a bad thing. It means more to them when you step out of that office and go see them at the ER when they're in, and you suddenly help make the stretcher and you say, well, I didn't know that oxygen container was so hard in the end of the stretcher, or you don't really need to say anything. How are things going? How are you? And you look at, as Patrick said, the physical and mental health of your employees, and you just make a short contact. It's not a formal thing. It's not a report to them at the end of the day. you don't talk about anything specific, but I think engagement, you know, is a two-way street. And I know that as leaders, we do an awful lot to get employees engaged, an awful lot. But again, you know, with respect to the employee, I don't see that. That's nothing for me, because I'm out here humping the bricks on 10 and 20 calls a day, and I'm just exhausted. I wish the supervisor, I wish the leader would come out and just see me out here for a minute. I think that makes a tremendous difference to engaging. And I think often leaders don't understand the engagement process is very inconvenient for us, because it doesn't happen from 8 to 5 Monday through Friday. Throughout my career, I'm proud to say that I went on a number of calls and visited with a number of crews. Often while I'm taking my wife to dinner or on the way back, and I was blessed to have a family that understood we're going by Station 3 to see the crews. I haven't seen X in a while, and I just want to say hi. That is the engagement they're looking for, I think, to us as leaders. It's not only for us to say, I'm going to balance the budget, I'm going to make sure we get cool stuff, but that I truly understand you're sweating like dogs out here at this call, and it's 95 degrees, and whatever the issues of the day are, I was standing there. And I think that means a lot to them when the engagement is not just us coming to work and punching the card either. It's being engaged with those employees. And whatever we're engaged in the HR side of the house, that doesn't really count to them. They don't see it. It doesn't mean anything to them, because the bell rings and they go on a call. That's their world. They need to know that you understand their world. And I think standing there as the chief at an accident, not telling them what to do, because trust me, as the chief, you really don't know what to do. You probably have 40 years of experience, but they're on the ground right there and they see it. To stand back and say, can I carry a box for you? Or just to stand back and watch and say, man, that was a really tough call. That was a great move you made on that. That means the world to them. And I think that will get them more engaged than a lot of the things we think about.
So now that we think about, you know, I think we laid a good foundation for what employee engagement is and the importance of it. I'd really like to try to focus now on some tips that we can give the leaders out there on how to increase their employee engagement and how to have a highly engaged workforce. Because you got to remember this. If we have a highly engaged workforce, there's going to be employee satisfaction. If there's good employee satisfaction, then there's going to be increased productivity. If there's going to be increased productivity, the patients that we're going to serve are going to receive a better product. And I think that we have to think about that. And Patrick, I know in a past life, you had a role of someone who had to really work with, patient satisfaction. And I know part of that was needing to grow the workforce and to make sure the workforce was doing, you know, a good job. So if we start to think about how do we increase employee engagement, I mean, what kind of tips are you throwing out to the people who are out there?
I think it starts out simple enough with just talking to them. Like Don was saying, you have to have a conversation. But more than that, it's not, you can't walk by your employee and just say, hey, what's up? Nothing. All right, good. Have a great day. Be safe. That doesn't get you anywhere. You have to take an active participatory role in listening to what your employees are saying. And so this relates all the way back down to Maslow's hierarchy of needs. If you don't know what that is, feel free to Google it. It's pretty popular. It's a basic tenet of what employee desires are, or not just employee, I'm sorry, human desires are. So the first thing is making sure they have the tools and equipment they need to do their job. So basically what that means is if I'm an EMT and my job is to, you know, grab the bag every day, and that's, you know, one of the first things we do with our basics is, you know, go with the paramedic and carry the bag, right? That's typically, at least with most rookies, what we used to do with them to make them earn their take, so to speak. If one of the straps is broken on the bag, and your EMT comes to you and says, hey, the strap on the bag is broken and it's really tough to carry this, you know, this bulky bag with only one strap. And you go, yeah, I'll take care of it. Well, yeah, is only going to work for not even a week. Because by the time, if you're not updating them and saying, hey, we hear you, we've got the bag on order and you should have it by Wednesday. That's a much different conversation than I heard you, we're putting it in, it's budget season, that's probably not going to happen. We've got to take it up the chain to make sure we can get these things ordered. You should take better care of your equipment if you know you're going to be using it. none of this is working. All that employee hears is, you don't care. You're asking me to do a job, and you're making my job exponentially more complicated or more difficult. So, overly simplified example, but that's really what it gets down to. If I've got a stretcher with a wheel that is cattywampus, it's locked in one position, and I keep bringing that up to you. If I don't have the basic things that I need in order to be the best medic I can be on a scene, that is always constantly on my mind, because that's one of those little things that from a chief's perspective is you could have the perspective to say, I wish they would just get over it and use the tools I'm giving them. But you're not using that piece of equipment. It's not the thing that you're dreading day in and day out or a real problem for you, because operationally that's not what you're focused on. So that's the first level. Listen to your employees and give them what they need. Now, this doesn't mean you have to buy them the stretcher or the gold lace bag. It's just making sure they have the basic things they need in order to be successful. The second piece is ensuring that they're feeling empowered and engaged, not only in the day-to-day operations, but you're listening to them when they're talking about possibly creating efficiencies in your operations. Hey, you know, have we thought about putting a station or a gas depot on, you know, 2nd and Main? You know, we've got, at least I think we're seeing a lot of traffic there. And while they themselves may not be able to articulate a business plan or be able to, you know, even validate some of their hunches, you have to at least show a genuine interest in pursuing them so far as it makes sense to the organization. So, you know, hey, I hear you. We thought about that a few years ago. We did a traffic study, whatever that is. You have to be able to articulate so that way you're not shutting them down. You're taking right. their ideas and you're making them meaningful to them.
Yeah.
And then ultimately it's, you know, the pinnacle of engagement is making sure that they're involved in the day-to-day operations, and that's much more complicated. But
you know, but I think that you bring up a good point. I think one of the components that you said that I don't want to gloss over is you've got to talk to your employees. I mean, as we bring these folks into our organization, we've got to learn who they are. We've got to learn their motivations. We've got to learn their goals. We've got to learn why they're doing the job that they want to come and do for us. And we've got to give them the tools to be successful. We've got to help grow them. We've got to help them reach the goals that they want to reach, and not just think of them as, you know, one of the things that I told somebody today that I'm working with their organization is, if you want a successful organization, treat your employees like they're your customers, and then let them take care of your customers. So I'm really glad you said that. One of the things that I like to ask people all the time is, how many of you out there have employees that have families? And again, you see the hands go up. And then I'll say, what are their names? And you see those blank stares. I mean, but how do you motivate somebody who's coming to work to make ends meet, coming to work for their family, coming to work for the passion of being an EMS, and you don't know anything about them? So, Don, if I'm going to ask you, you know, employee engagement, how do we increase it within our organization? What do you give me?
Well, I think I actually did the first one first, and that was you have to be with them, you have to be out there, you have to have that conversation, and some of those conversations are uncomfortable if you don't know those employees. So you do need to know them, and that's very hard when you have a very large organization. And believe it or not, it's very hard when you have a small one. For the first minute, I was thinking how many people were Googling the word cattywampus. So for those of you that did that, congratulations. I believe that's a Pennsylvania Dutch term. But Patrick, you sent me back 50 years when you said that. So that was kind of
That's a Carolina credo. Come on, man.
Well, that's right. But it's something from the Pennsylvania Dutch is where it started. So that was kind of cool. I'm sorry. I get off task. I think the other thing you need to do, and this is, you know, I know people listen to the podcast for quick tips. This is not a quick tip, and this is not hard, but this is something that I think will bring people more into line with trying to be engaged in anything else. I worked for an organization one time that had a scheduling issue. The schedule just didn't seem to work as well as it could. There are a variety of reasons, and there were two or three people that had some excellent ideas on a shift change that, you know, could work. And instead of saying, thanks a lot, we'll let you know, we said, bring it to us. And if you don't want to present it publicly, well, bring it to us and, you know, we'll talk about it in a small room. But And so we gave them the perimeters and said, or the parameters, and we said, listen, the one thing is, we've got to be able to walk this out for 30 days, at least 30 days, and it's got to work for a 30-day period. And in our experience, we showed that if a schedule worked out for at least a 30-day period, it probably would work out for 6 months or 9 months. And we had two or three excellent, thought out, I mean, they really put their heads together and worked on it. None of them walked out past 30 days, but that wasn't the point. The point was they were very actively engaged in an issue that they felt was important and trying to solve it. And they really did under the short period of time that they had. They'd work it for a pay period and then go, you know, I think this will work. And only when you went out 30 days. The other thing it did is it gave them a picture of the complexity of some of the issues we work with daily. And I think when you engage these folks, you have to remember most of their engagement involves patients, and those are 20-minute problems. That's the extent of their engagement is you go to a problem, you have 20 minutes to fix it, get on the road, get to the hospital, next patient. And most of the engagement that we have as leaders is a rarely a 1 week engagement, more 1 month, 3 month, a year, 5 years. And it gave them, I thought, an excellent picture of, wow, this is not as easy as I thought it was, and it affects a whole lot more people than just me. And when you engage an employee, don't be surprised when they come back and fix their problem in this project tremendously, and then everybody else kind of gets, you know, stuck. And that's just being human. But I think the more you can get them engaged when they sit down to work on this project, they're going to look over to somebody, well, the boss told me to work on scheduling or work on inventory or work on that issue we have with X. And it makes them start to think about things they can improve. And it really, eventually, it will make your job much easier because instead of you pounding out 15 and 20 issues, a lot of people take ownership for them and run away with them. Now, you got to remember half of those probably won't finish them up because we're all human, but half of them are, and they'll get better ideas than you could see. But Chris, to your point, once they understand that they're part of the organization, and when I say that, it's not just because you put on the uniform and get in the truck and go run calls. That's not being part of the organization. When you claim ownership to whatever corner you're going to claim ownership to, that's when engagement happens. And it doesn't need to be engagement where fireworks are going off. It can be simple engagement of a simple issue. But at the end of the day, those are the people that are going to show you what they're made of, and it's going to start with a simple request of fixing X, or not fixing, but you said you can improve Y. Why don't you take this with you, and here's some of the parameters that we can't go either side. Go ahead if you want to, but it's harder that way. And let them help themselves with a little bit of guidance. You know, I say we're always the rudder, a little bit of a rudder to make sure they don't go off the rails, and they will surprise the heck out of you. They will just blow you away. Now, that's hard. That's real hard to step back and let somebody take a project like that. It was real hard when we were parents and our kids, we took the training wheels off too. It was hard. We knew they were going to fall. That's part of the process. When our college-age students go off to college and we wave goodbye and they never see us crying when we're going away, that's real hard. But it's a true way to get engagement out of the employee, I think.
And I want to jump on what you said very quickly about having them focus on something beyond patient care. It's really hard to think about a budget when you're staring down a laryngoscope trying to find some cords. And I think when you pull that mentality out of your street medic and then put them into, hey, help us develop a schedule. Hey, help us look at a budget. Hey, look at what inventory looks like. That's a very eye-opening experience, and I'll just speak from my own experience because that's where I was. I was a street medic for 12 years and then had the opportunity to go to graduate school and do all these other things. And there was, there was a very different paradigm that you're looking at when you have the opportunity to look at things from that perspective of, let's look at it from this, from an operational perspective, not just a, here's what it looks like in my 20-minute span of running a call. The other thing I want to highlight is when we start talking about these different strata of employees and where they sit, it's very easy to demonize this middle column, whether we're calling them disengaged or middle performers or, you know, meets performance but not exceeds. And the reality of the situation is those are your workhorses. Those are the people that are coming in and they're doing the job for the most part well. They are the people that sustain your organization. Now, they're not going to be the ones that, like I said earlier, are going to, you know, carry the banner and flag for your organization. But that doesn't make them bad employees. It means most likely we have to find a way to motivate them or ensure that they're still feeling valued in the day-to-day operations that you're under or in.
I would have to agree with you, Patrick. The middle ground, the middle column really are the workhorse of the organization. And commonly in organizations that I've been in, somebody will come up and talk about X or Y, and they say, well, you know, they're not a star. And I shrugged and I said, okay, well, most of us aren't. You know, when you have 5% of your workforce who are shiny stars, and somebody will say, oh, I wish everybody was a shiny star, I'd say, well, I don't. Because if all of them are shiny stars, then nobody's a shiny star. You've got to have the workhorses that do that solid work every day. They come in, they enjoy what they do. They really like taking care of patients, and they enjoy where they work. They're not as engaged as we'd like, but it's not our life. It's their life. They're performing the work. There are ones that will step up and say, I'm going to go the extra mile, and there are ones that step back and say, I'm really not interested. Well, the middle ground, I think Patrick's right. You need to make sure that they remain satisfied with what they're doing because they are the livelihood of most of the work we'll be doing.
Yeah, they're your career EMTs. They don't want to be a paramedic. They're perfectly happy being an EMT. And you can offer, you make sure you're offering them every operation or educational opportunity. But if they're not interested and they're happy, God bless, man. Well, thanks for being here.
Yeah, and I think it's one of the things that you really have to think about it in the sense of our job as leaders is to get the very best out of the workforce. And even though those folks that are in that middle category, you know, whether we're going to call them middle performers, whether we're going to call them solid performers, you know, those are the people who are doing the work. But are they happy when they're doing the work? Are they engaged when they're doing the work? Are they just trying to get through their shift so they can get home and do what they have to do next? And I think that we can't forget that it's still about motivation. It's still about inspiration. It's still about growth and development. It's still about helping them get to the next level. If we know that people want to become a supervisor in a 3-year time frame, what are we doing to help them grow to get to that component? Are we just going to wait for 3 years to come up and then them finally say, okay, I'm ready? And then them, you know, go another 2 years of preparing all they need to prepare to become a supervisor? Or if we know that in advance, can we put them on a path and get them with a mentor and give them the things that they need to do to be successful? And I just want to say this as we get ready to close, guys, is that, you know, the success of the organization is going to be, you know, is going to be determined by the engagement, the satisfaction, the productivity, and what they're giving the patients, you know, the excellent care that they're giving the patients. Those are the things that we really have to focus on. So, Patrick, if I can go to you for a closing thought, the leaders that are out there with all your experience of employee engagement, you know, getting patient satisfaction, making sure that you're getting the very best of the employees, what do you give them as a final thought?
I think the actual final thought is you overinvest in your employees. And that's a very easy refrigerator magnet bumper sticker to say. But the reality of what I mean when I say that, specifically as it pertains to this podcast, as it pertains to EMS, more so than any other health sector, is I always hear, well, as soon as I train them, they leave, or they're going to go to med school, or they're doing this just so they can get on the fire department, or they just want to do this till they get into nursing. And you know what my answer to that always is what an opportunity to be able to influence that next level. And so when I say overinvest, I'm saying your perfect example. If you got a guy who wants to be a supervisor in 3 years, excellent. Hook them up with a mentor. Start putting them on projects early, even if it's just as an observational capacity. Because who knows? That person might go off and become a neurosurgeon, or that person might stick around with the organization for the next 20 years. There is no downsize in ensuring that we are making sure that they are successful, making sure that they feel like they are a part of the organization that they're with for the time that they are there with you. And so The turnover is a real thing in EMS, and the ability to advance is a real thing, but you have to overinvest or else all you're doing is you know, transporting people from point A to point B.
And I think that one of the things to think about is, you know, you talked about investing and them wanting to leave. You know, we give them what they need to know. We give them a little bit of education. We help them reach their goals. And then they want to eventually leave to go work at a better system, to go to medical school, to go to nursing school. And I always say the same thing, that I would rather invest in them and make them the very best that they can be and get the very best out of them while they're there and then leave, than them be mediocre and stay, and me have to deal with an employee that is not highly motivated. So I'm glad you brought that up. Don, your closing thought for the leaders that are out there about creating a highly engaged workforce.
I think leaders need to be engaged in their workforce to have an engaged workforce. I think it comes from us as leaders to be engaged, and that doesn't mean anything more than having a conversation with them. To me, when you go home every day, if you pass by a station and you don't stop and say hi every day, I mean, every day you pass by a station, and sometimes you really have to drive a little bit to go to some stations. Well, tough. You need to drive a little bit to go by some far out stations to say hi. That engagement will pay off in dividends, including the honor, and I'm like you guys, it's the honor of somebody who says, I'm leaving to go to med school. It's an honor when somebody says, I'm going to go be a PA, I'm going to go be a nurse, because when they truly succeed up to the level way beyond me, I own a piece of that. I can look and say, you know, we were the ones that kind of started that path. We all would like people to stick around for 30 years, but that's how our parents' parents worked, and that's not how this workforce works. Truly, they're looking for the next goal. I agree with you, Chris. Somebody who says, I'm ready to go to the next step, is a lot better than somebody that's the anchor that we're dragging, and they just don't have any motivation at all. So I tell the leaders out there, to have a motivated workforce, you've got to be the motivator with your workforce. You've got to be the one to put the first card down on the table.
And I agree 100%. I mean, when it comes to employee engagement, we've got to take care of the people who are doing the work. And I think we've touched on a lot of great things in this show. And one of the things specifically was that if we trust people to go into somebody's house at 3 o'clock in the morning where they may not come out, we need to trust them to help us run the organization as well. Now, they may not know the things that we know, but we can mentor them, we can guide them, we can get them involved in those projects if they want to be involved. And then this way, we're growing our leaders internally, and we may find some, you know, loyalty that grows out of that people who may looking for the next big thing wind up staying with the organizations even longer. But employee engagement is real. Employee engagement is something we have to focus on and make it part of your 2017 goals as leaders to increase your employee engagement. Remember, without them, we're not in business, and we've got to give them all that we've got. So for Don Lundy, for Patrick Pianezza, I'm Chris Sabalero. I want to thank you for joining us on EMS Leadership. And until we come and chat with you again, everybody have a great evening.